We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
And this is Focus. It's our morning talk show. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're very happy to have, as the guests in this first hour of the show, Roy Blunt Jr. He is a writer. He's the author of 21 books, I guess 22, counting the one we're talking about here this morning, covering a wide range of subjects, everything from the Pittsburgh Steelers to Robert E. Lee to What Dogs Are Thinking. He is a regular panelist on NPR's program Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. He's a member of the American Heritage Dictionary Usage Panel, and he's the author of a new book, Hail, Hail, Euphoria, presenting the Marx Brothers in Duck Soup, which he calls the greatest war movie ever made. The book is just out now, and it's a lot of fun to read. Maybe it would give you a reason to go back and watch the Marx Brothers again, this movie in particular, and we'll be talking about it this morning in this part of the show. Questions are certainly welcome. Questions, comments, you want to call in, join the conversation, you can do that. 333-9455 is the number for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. That's the number to use if it would be a long-distance call. And you may also send email to will-talk@illinois.edu. Anyway here, you are certainly welcome to be a part of the conversation. And Mr. Blunt, hello.
Hey there, David.
Hey, thanks very much for talking with us. We appreciate it. I hadn't seen this movie in a long time before I sat down to watch it again to get ready to talk with you, and it tickles me totally. And the same, I think, probably as much this time as the last, I don't know how many times I've seen this movie. And you wonder, you know, how many other things, how many items of popular culture from the 30s still work, but this movie does, their movies do. Why do you think it is that that's true, that still now we can watch these movies and still laugh?
Well, they're, you know, they don't try to make topical points or really fit in with the zeitgeist at the time or anything. They just are wild children. And they're a physical comedy, which is, you know, physical comedy doesn't stale the way verbal comedy does sometimes. It's is remarkable. I mean, Harpo is especially a wonderful physical clown, but Groucho is too. I mean, they dance and they tangle up with each other, and Harpo winds up with his hand in the pocket of various men. It's just sort of nonstop pointlessness that's a great relief to watch.
Yeah, I have a few clips here during our conversation we might play, but some of the best stuff here you can't play on the radio because it's all visual, and particularly one scene that people may recall. This is, and it's very famous. It's a scene where Groucho and Harpo are dressed alike, and they're standing on either side of a what looks like kind of a doorway or something where there had been a mirror.
Right.
And the mirror gets broken, so they're standing there and doing mirror images of each other, and it's just a magnificent thing to watch. But of course, if we played it on the radio, there would be a long period of silence.
Yeah, which was, in fact, there's a long period of silence in the movie. There's no sound at all through that entire scene, no background music or anything. So it's a real throwback to silent films, and it's also a throwback to their childhood. I mean, it goes, there are all sorts of one thing that is lasting, I think, about the Marx Brothers comedy is that it goes back to their childhood. I mean, they are brothers and they're really close, and yet there are all sorts of tensions among them. And it's so childish that it's lasting.
Yeah, and though I think you have to say too that these characters that they played and the way that they interacted with each other, these were honed and developed by many, many hours performing live on stage in vaudeville. So they so they had done these sorts of things sort of over and over and over and over and over again. Right. It looks like they're just making it up as they're going along, but they're not.
Yeah, and even before vaudeville, they had done it on the streets of New York City where they had were chased through various non-Jewish neighborhoods to get back to theirs. And Chico developed his terrible Italian accent that he uses in all the movies by trying to pass as an Italian in the Italian neighborhood so he wouldn't get beat up. So, and they, you know, the roots of their comedy is so deep in various forms of American professional comedy, but also in the amateur comedy of childhood.
Yeah. So it's sort of my understanding that in part these characters, the Italian guy and Harpo, who is supposed to be Irish, I guess, and Groucho, that these are, were ethnic stereotype characters that you saw in vaudeville. So they were taking that, and that was a kind of a starting point. But do you think it's the case that they really, that these characters really end up being an extension of them? That is, they're in some way they're being them. They're just being themselves.
They are. Yeah, Groucho was the intellectual, cynical, verbal guy in real life, and that's what he plays in the movies. And Harpo was just a crazy person all his entire life, but a sweet-natured crazy person that nobody could hold anything against. And that's pretty much the character he plays in the movies. And Chico was a charmer who, the reason he got his name is Chico, not Chico. He got that for chasing chicks. And he was a wonderful vernacular piano player and a hustler. And he was always coming up with angles, and that's what he does in the movies.
Yeah. As people maybe will remember the plot of this movie, and it's pretty loose, it is set in the country of Fredonia. Sorry, I should have played the national anthem so we could all
hail,
stand
hail
up.
Hail, Fredonia, land of the brave and free.
So they start out here, and Fredonia, a big surprise, is in financial trouble.
Yeah.
And Margaret Dumont, playing Margaret Dumont, as she does in every movie, right, is a wealthy heiress, and they're asking her for money to support the country. And she says, okay, I will give you my money, she says in her way, providing that they appoint Groucho, Rufus T. Firefly, as the head of the government.
Yeah, right, which is quite a condition. And it's, if you can accept that up front, then you can accept the accept the logic of that up front, you can accept the rest of the movie.
So Groucho, he shows up after everybody sings the anthem, and Groucho shows up. And there's the first exchanges here in the movie is between Groucho and Margaret Dumont. And it's a standard sort of bit of business. But I thought we'd play a little bit of that. This is Maggie D. and Groucho.
Never mind that stuff. Take a card.
Card? What'll I do with the card?
You can keep it. I've got 51 left. Now, what were you saying?
As chairwoman of the reception committee, I welcome you with open arms.
Is that so? How late do you stay open?
I've sponsored your appointment because I feel you are the most able statesman in all Fredonia.
Well, that covers a lot of ground. Say, you cover a lot of ground yourself. You better beat it. I hear they're going to tear you down and put up an office building where you're standing. You can leave in a taxi. If you can't get a taxi, you can leave in a huff. If that's too soon, you can leave in a minute and a half. You know you haven't stopped talking since I came here? You must have been vaccinated with a phonograph needle.
The future of Fredonia rests on you. Promise me you'll follow in the footsteps of my husband.
How do you like that? I haven't been on the job 5 minutes, and already she's making advances to me. Not that I care, but where is your husband?
Why, he's dead.
I'll bet he's just using that as an excuse.
I was with him till the very end.
No wonder he passed away.
I held him in my arms and kissed him.
Oh, I see. Then it was murder. Will you marry me? Did he leave you any money? Answer the second question first.
He left me his entire fortune.
Is that so? Can't you see what I'm trying to tell you? I love you.
Oh, Your Excellency.
You're not so bad yourself.
So that's pretty typical exchange there between between Margaret Dumont and Groucho. And I guess one of the things about Groucho was that he could, even off screen, he could never not be Groucho. He couldn't stop being Groucho.
Yeah, unfortunately, he was always telling jokes. Mia Farrow was in a movie with him. No, not Mia Farrow. Her mother, I'm sorry.
Marina O'Sullivan, yes.
Yeah. Was in a movie, and Groucho was taken by her and took her out to lunch. And she said she found him sort of sexy, but he wouldn't stop telling jokes.
The other thing I asked poor Margaret Dumont, when you see here, she's in a lot of these movies, and she's always this essentially the same character. And Margaret Dumont apparently felt that she was a great actress and that getting mixed up with the boys ruined her career.
Yeah, she's a bit of an enigma, Margaret Dumont. Groucho claimed that she didn't get any of the jokes in the movies and that she didn't even realize they were jokes. But I think that's but everybody pretty much thinks that's unlikely, and that she knew what was going on. And I mean, she had been a showgirl for quite a while and had seen a bit of the world. She was born in Brooklyn, named Daisy Baker. And she was briefly married to a rich man, so she had a sort of superficial background in rich ladiness. But then he died, and she had to go back in the show business. And she, was typed forever as this character, but she sure was good at it.
Yeah. Well, we have a caller here. Why don't we bring him into the conversation, somebody who is nearby, near Champaign, on a cell phone, I think, on our line number one right here. Hello.
Hi, David. Great show. I joined it kind of late, so I didn't get the title of the program, but the gist of it, I'm guessing we're talking about the Marx Brothers movies, which are just great. The dialogue and the pacing is so fast and so quick. Actually, I had a comment and then a quick question. I was wondering your guest in these movies, because these gentlemen were so bright, was there any ad-libbing, or was it all following the script? Because it sure seemed to be off the top of their heads. But my comment was, you mentioned about vaudeville, and I think I remember that for a time the Marx Brothers kind of cut their teeth on Broadway, on vaudeville. They lived in the near south side of Chicago, on South Park Avenue, I want to say, for albeit perhaps a short period of time. I wonder if that was true. And then my final comment, I believe the daughter of Groucho Marx wrote a story, a book about Groucho, and I'm guessing he wasn't quite great father material, and he ran into some financial distress in his later years, and I just was wondering if your guest wanted to comment on any or all of that, and I'll go ahead and ring off. Thanks.
Yeah. All right.
Well, we're talking about Duck Soup, which I wrote a book about called Hail, Hail, Euphoria, and it's, yeah, they did live in Chicago for a while they were in vaudeville. They sort of traveled out of Chicago, the mother and the father and the four or five boys. And, Groucho doted on his daughter and then turned against her when she grew up. And he was a terrible husband and eventually a terrible father. He had two daughters, one of whom became an alcoholic, and the other one he tried to turn into an actress and had her on his show when she was a kid, and she didn't like it, didn't want to do it, but he kept pushing her to be part of his comedy, and he wanted everybody to be part of his comedy, and it wasn't always, and people often wanted to get out of his comedy off the screen. He had financial trouble during the Depression. He lost all his money, but then he made it back, and eventually he was in good shape financially, unlike Chico, never could hold on to a dollar, and Zeppo made some money, but then I think he wound up living off of Groucho.
Yeah. I think the caller raises an interesting question about writing, and I think people, as brilliant as these guys were, there were many people who contributed to these movies, and they had writers, and they were written, so they were following a script.
Yeah, I don't think anything in the movies was ad-lib. Most of their movies they took on the road and played them in theaters, and got the routines all down and the lines all down before they made the movie. But Duck Soup was improvised considerably, but it was improvised in the Malibu, or some of it on the set, but some of it also in the beach house of Leo McCarey, the director. Leo McCarey was a great, he would make, well, for instance, The Awful Truth, which he also directed. He directed more different kinds of comedy than anybody. And he worked with just about every great comic actor of his time. They, like the mirror scene where Harpo's pretending to be Groucho's reflection, and all the comedy with peanuts and lemonade, and turning over the lemonade, the peanut stand, and dancing in the lemonade with Harpo and Chico was all old vaudeville stuff that McCary undoubtedly set up for them and rehearsed them in. So it was everything they did in movies was it seemed fresh, but it, as somebody said, they were working with copper plumbing. They had done, you know, they had worked all this stuff out, and they had inherited a great tradition from vaudeville in the early theater and the radio. They had been on in every kind of comedy leading up to them, and they also inherited some of the old New Yorker humor, written humor tradition. Groucho did coming up through Ring Lardner and Robert Benson.
Our guest in this hour of focus is Roy Blunt, Jr. He's authored a number of books, and we're talking about his most recent, which is about the Marx Brothers film Duck Soup. Hail, Hail, Euphoria is the title of the book, and it's out now if you want to read it, and it makes a nice companion to the movie, and if you haven't seen the movie in a while, you might seek it out and take a look at it, because I think it's just as good as ever. We have a caller here to bring in to the conversation here where we are in Champaign, so let's do that. And line number one right here. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I'm wondering if you're familiar with an article, an extended review by Stanley Cavell, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, C-A-V-E-L-L, who's a is or was a philosophy professor at Harvard, of the Marx Brothers. It's you could find it on the internet under something called Nothing Goes Without Saying, and it's a an extensive philosophical analysis of the Marx Brothers movies. And if you are familiar with it, what do you think of it? I'll listen on the air. Thank you.
I'm trying to remember whether I read that or not. I don't think that name, Stanley Cavell, or however you pronounce it, is familiar. I don't think I did read that, though. Nothing goes without saying, but, well, Harpo goes without saying.
What this story about Harpo? Now, I guess I've heard two different things. I thought that I had read somewhere that back when they were starting in vaudeville, that and they were being advised by their uncle, their mom's brother, who was an established and very well known vaudeville performer, who was advising them and helping them shape the act. And I thought I remembered reading something about how Harpo either he couldn't remember his lines or he would mess up his lines, and finally his uncle was so frustrated he just said, just don't talk.
No, what happened was that Al Sheen forgot to write any lines for Harpo in the sketch he wrote for the brothers, and Harpo was offended and ad-libbed a lot of lines, which got no laughs, and therefore he never spoke on stage again.
Ah, okay. Well, that it worked out pretty well for him.
Yeah. There's a little clip on the web of his voice, you can hear him talking, reminiscing just for about 30 seconds. And so he had this very strong New York accent. Mm.
We need to pause for just a moment here because we want to do a little business. We have to get back to the reality here, and the reality is that a couple times during the year, we sit down and we encourage people to support this station that they value so much. And we know that they do because they tell us so. And we have people who have been very generous and loyal and supported us over the years, and to them we want to say thanks. But one of the best ways that we can encourage new people to support the station is at a time like this where we just sit down simply and ask. You know, I think somebody once said, you don't ask, you don't get. Well, we're asking. And we hope that now you'll take the opportunity to support the station. You can call us, you can go online and do it. And what we're talking about here is money, folks, as Chico says in the movie Dallas, you know, like Dallas, Texas, where he had an uncle who lived in Dallas. That's what we're looking for, some dollars. And our guest here in the studio with me is our general manager, Mark. And thanks very much for stopping by here to give us a little bit of your time and to talk about supporting the station.
Well, and hopefully convincing a couple of your listeners or a couple or more to make an important call and an investment in the program service that you've come to rely on. Over 40% of WILL's operating income comes from membership contributions. And during this drive alone, we need to raise $175,000. And we got off to a good start with the Power Hour yesterday, and we did really well this morning, but it would be fantastic if the first hour of Focus, if we put it on the boards, showing that the audience for Focus is not only loyal in terms of listenership and participation, but also willing to support the service. Because it is an investment. It is a costly service for us to provide. So if you enjoy the program, why not make a call right now, not with a question or a comment, but with a pledge of support at 244-9455.
Yeah. It'll just take a moment here, and we try to build some opportunities into the program for you. You're not going to miss any of the show. You do right now, and we'll continue to talk with Roy Blunt. When we do this, we try to think of as many different ways as we can, essentially to deliver the same message. I've been doing this for a long time, and sometimes I think, well, shouldn't the programs just sell themselves? Well, maybe they should, and maybe for some people they do. But it's a good thing to remind folks that while this service is here, all you have to do is turn on the radio. There are no commercials, but it's not free. It takes money to produce the programs we do. We pay dues to National Public Radio so we can have All Things Considered and Morning Edition and all the other NPR shows you enjoy. So what we're just saying to people as well, you use the service, just pay a little bit of the cost. You know, you pay money for your newspaper. You pay money for your cable. You pay money for a lot of stuff. Well, think about this in the same way. Think of it as a subscription, something you subscribe to, so that you can have that reliable service so that then when you do turn on the radio and you're looking for Focus or the Afternoon Magazine or Market Reports or Car Talk or Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me or All Things Considered, that the show is there. That's what we're talking about here.
And Focus is really a unique proposition. There are not that many markets in the country that have the volume and the quality of daily talk interview programming that WILL does have. And the ones that I'm familiar with are primarily in much, much larger markets. So the priority that this station has placed on this program is a result of the listeners being willing to support it in the past. And there is never a day that goes by that I'm not surprised and impressed by the guests that David and Harriet Williamson, the producer, are able to produce for this program. I tune in many times and may not know a guest, their name or their expertise or the reason they're on that program. But by the time the program is done, I am never bored. I've always learned something. You end up talking about it over lunch. You probably find the same thing when you get to lunch. You bring up topics that have come up that morning on Focus. We share that experience. We share the benefits of this program. Now we're asking you to share in the cost of helping to support it with a membership contribution, because that really is what membership drives are all about, just taking a moment to not take a service for granted and realize that non-commercial radio requires participation from its listeners. And the way you do that is to go to your phone and dial 244-9455 or a web pledge at willpledge.org.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks very much, Mark Leonard. He's our general manager. We'll talk at you some more a little bit later. The guest this morning, certainly you should know that name, Roy Blunt Jr. He is a regular panelist on NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. He's authored a number of books. His newest is all about the Marx Brothers movie Duck Soup, which he subtitles here, The Greatest War Movie Ever Made, his book Hail, Hail, Euphoria.
Oh.
Did they set out to do something? Were they wanting to do an anti-war movie or something that was particularly political, do you think?
Groucho said we were just four Jews trying to be funny. And in fact, they just wanted to make fun of everything. To me, it's a movie of four brothers picking on each other and giving each other a hard time. So it's more basic than any kind of... And the reason I call it the greatest war movie of all time, it was actually picked the 24th greatest war movie of all time by Military History Magazine. We didn't have room on the cover to put 24th. But it's not really an anti-war movie. I mean, they're in favor of war. They love war. They enjoy it enormously, and they win. And then they get to throw fruit at the woman who bankrolled the war. It's just a wonderful. You get to make fun of war and also get off on it at the same time. So, I don't think it has any political point. It's except that it gets at. I mean, and there are lines in it like Groucho says he can't call off the war. I've already paid a month's rent on the battlefield, which reminded me of the preparations for the war in Iraq. And then there's also the really basic stuff like the tit-for-tat element of old vaudeville and old Laurel and Hardy. The director of Duck Soup, Leo McCarey, was the person who brought together Laurel and Hardy back in the silent movie days, and lots of their comedy was tit for tat. You cut off half of my mustache, and I'll cut off both halves of your mustache. You know, back and forth. And war is, you know, is tit for tat. You know, you've got to retaliate. You feel like you have to retaliate, and retaliate bigger than what was done to you. And then there's the whole, just the whole element of enjoyment, the thrill of. There's a huge scene, a huge dancing scene, which Woody Allen in Hannah and Her Sisters watches in a theater, and it gives him a reason to live somehow or another. But it's all about how the country is delighted to be going to war, and dancing, and that applies to this country, unfortunately. Yeah. Not at the moment, but it certainly did in a previous administration.
Yeah.
And so there are also this sort of visceral statements about war that are deeper than political.
Yeah. Well, we have that. Let's play a little bit of the song about going to war.
And it's war! And it's war! Gather the forces! Harness the horses! It's war! Fredonia's gone to war. Each native son will grab a gun and run away to war. At last we're going to war.
At last the country's gone to war.
It seems the country's going to war.
At last the country's going to war.
We're going to war.
This is a fact we can't ignore.
We're going to war.
This is a fact we can't ignore. We're going to war.
In case you haven't heard before, I think they think we're going to war. I think they think we're going to war.
We're going to war.
I think they think we're going to war.
We're going to war.
Going to war.
We're going to war.
We're going to war.
Well, it goes on from there. That little xylophone interlude. What's happening there is the brothers are playing a xylophone on the helmets of a number of soldiers that are lined up in front of them, and then it devolves into this rather bizarre sort of minstrel show kind of thing. And it's just very, I don't know. It just strikes me as very strange. Before this, there's a trial sequence where Chico is put on trial for being a spy. And so there, and there's some very sort of standard stuff between him and Groucho. And then suddenly someone says, we're going to go to war, and everybody's really happy about it. And it breaks into this very, very strange, big-time musical number about Heidi, Heidi, ho, we're all going to go off to war.
Yeah, there's a, you know, a Negro spiritual element and a hoedown element, and they're playing. And Groucho does the reverse of his famous walk. He, instead of walking with his head jutted forward, he walks with his hips jutted forward. It's bizarre. It's just a wonderfully surreal and endlessly watchable number. I wanted my book. I cast my book as the commentary, which doesn't exist. There's no commentary track on the DVD of Duck Soup. But one thing I hope the book does is to give people the pleasure of watching the movie again and again and again.
Yeah, and then from this, it goes on to the climax, I guess, of the movie, which is the battle scene, which is very sort of odd and chaotic.
I think it's odd. Yeah,
and odd. Well, that's the thing about this movie. It sort of becomes. It starts out as what seems to be a fairly standard Marx Brothers movie, and then just gets odder and odder. I think, until the very climax where, yes, indeed, Ambassador Trentino, who's the bad guy from the neighboring country of Sylvania, gets his head stuck in a door, and so they're throwing vegetables at him. And then he says, "All right, I surrender." And then as Margaret Dumont begins to sing the anthem of Fredonia, then the boys start throwing vegetables at her, and that's the end of the movie.
There's something wonderful about that. I don't know. You know, I don't know whether it's throwing things at your mother or throwing things at the Statue of Liberty or throwing things at a stiff, you know, proper lady or what, but there's something wonderfully appealing about that to me. And it just makes no sense at all. They've won the war, and the nice lady who likes them, or at least likes Groucho, wants to celebrate victory, and they start throwing fruit at her.
And she's been right in the battle sequence. She's she's right in the thick of the fight with them as they're throwing things at the enemy or shooting out the hole in the wall, and the roof collapses a couple of different times. It's really total chaos.
But it just moves so well. The great thing about Duck Soup is that it doesn't have a sappy romantic subplot where odd looking tenor and a Kitty Carlisle or somebody take a break to sing a love song.
Yeah.
There's none of that. It's just sheer nonstop. I hate the word hilarity, but you know what I mean. Woody Allen said that one thing that Duck Soup doesn't have is dead spots. There's not a single dead spot in it.
Yeah, and this was the last movie they made at Paramount, and after this they moved to MGM, and that was when you started to get these romantic subplots. The very next movie they made was Night at the Opera,
right.
and then that was when they started to have, I think, other leading men that was sort of the stand-in for the fourth guy, the straight
Zeppo
man, the Zeppo guy. Yeah, the Zeppo guy. This was Zeppo's last movie.
Duck Soup was, but even in the past, in all the other books, they're, just making, wreaking havoc for some reason. You know, they're trying to save the circus or they've got some purpose. They're motivated. But Duck Soup is just sheer unmotivated chaos. Only it's really tightly organized and crackerjack chaos.
Yeah. When this movie came out in 1933, apparently it was not a particular success.
Yeah, there was hardly any. You know, there wasn't much money around anyway. But in 1933, it was the depths of the Depression. But this movie didn't lose money, but it didn't do as well as their previous movies by a long shot. And Paramount was going broke anyway, so the studio and the brothers were happy to part ways.
Do you think that something about its lack of success? As you say, it didn't make money, but nobody had any, so that's maybe not a big surprise. But that part of it was that it wasn't. There was something about it that was a little different than what they had done before, and I wondered how audiences at the time would have felt about the movie, particularly that when you get into this sort of odder section where we go from the "Heidi Ho, let's go to war" into the actual war.
Yeah, the reviews were mixed, and it seems likely that people did want a romantic, sappy subplot, which, if nothing else, gives you a chance to catch your breath between the comedy, so you can see why it wouldn't have been as great a commercial success as some of the, like Day at the Races, I think, was their most successful book movie and commercially, and it's not a long shot not as good as the others.
Yeah.
Night at the Opera, some people prefer Night at the Opera to Duck Soup, but those two are the best by far. Though Monkey Business is good, too, except I don't like the ending. And Horse Feathers is good, and Animal Crackers. But Duck Soup is just sheer, pure Marx Brothers.
Yeah, I guess I'm sort of partial to I think it's Horse Feathers. Is that the one that's set at the college?
Yeah, that's good.
Professor Wagstaff, which has one of my personally favorite Groucho Marx lines, the one about the dean waxing wroth.
Roth
out there too. I'll have Roth wax the dean for a while. Yes, it's one of my favorites, and maybe living here at a college, that's why that one particularly tickles me.
And Harpo gleefully is shoveling books into the fire, and then Groucho sings whatever it is, I'm against it. And then there's a football game, too, in which Harpo carries the ball while riding a chariot with driving a chariot with horses in front of him. And apparently the football scene was filmed on a real football field and with people in the stands, and they couldn't get them to cheer, couldn't get the people in the stands to loosen up. And so Harpo rode around the field on his chariot naked, and that got them going. Didn't get into the movie. These days, that would be in the movie, which, Borat or somebody like that would get grosser than that. But all that is just Harpo loved to get naked, and just like a two-year-old kid, he liked to run around naked. And one good thing about one hand, Duck Soup was before the production code that forbade movies to make fun of American institutions and tone down the sex and everything in movies. So it was free in that sense. But also, it wasn't free in the sense now that you just there's nothing forbidden in movies anymore, hardly. So that. A little bit of a restraint is good for comedy.
Well, that's another thing that you can say about their movies is that in addition to the fact that there's this chaos and this anarchy and they like to deflate overstuffed shirts, which is sort of their stock in trade, there's still something that's very gentle about it because there's no bad language. There's really no real violence. There's no nudity, although there's a lot of chasing of women. That's pretty much it's just chasing and
literally chasing
and some sort of leering and eyebrow waggling, but there's really nothing beyond that point. So really, there's no reason why you couldn't sit down and watch it with your kids.
Yeah, there's a really hot woman in Duck Soup, Miss Vera Markell is the name of the character, and but the boys, Zeppo at one point sort of gives her the eye. But she's not at all. They're not at all, Zeppo plays somebody who's about 14, so he has sort of pubescent juices. But the boys are the three brothers, three main brothers are. Harpo will chase a woman, but it's almost just to chase her for the exercise of it. And Groucho will leer at them, but he's not. And he's trying to marry Margaret Dumont, but. Clearly for her money, clearly and expressly for her money. So they're pre-adolescent, Chico and Harpo and Groucho.
Zeppo was the grown-up, but only to the point of being in his teens.
Right. Yeah, that's right. He's the youngest brother, of course. Zeppo was a real street. They were all juvenile delinquents as kids, but Zeppo was a real thug. He stole cars, and when his mother called him up and said, "You got to join the act because Gummo got drafted," and so go to Waukegan or someplace.
Oh, I think it was Rockford.
Rockford, okay. You're right.
Illinois.
That's right. And he said, "Ma, I can't go tonight. I got a date." And she said, "You got to go." So he went and joined the act, even though he had nothing. He couldn't do anything much, but that very night, the date he was on was with a friend of his, and they were going to meet two girls and go off into the bushes with them. And the guy who showed up, his friend, went off in the bushes, I guess with both of them. Their brothers showed up, and a gunfight ensued, and Zeppo's friend killed one of the brothers and went to prison for it.
Yeah. So if Zeppo had kept his appointment there, it could have been a whole different – the rest of his life would have had a whole different story.
That's right.
Yeah. Something I guess I thought was interesting, coming back to the Vera Markell and Zeppo, there in this movie there was this plan for another sort of romantic subplot involving them and Mrs. Teasdale's daughter, and it got very complicated, and in the end they just decided to take all that out.
Yeah, a lot of the script, a great deal of the script was abandoned and discarded and replaced with stuff that Leo McCary worked out with them ahead of time. Lots of visual comedy, physical comedy. There were good things in the script. Lots of things in the script did survive, but The script was written by Bert Kalmar and Harry Ruby, who were great songwriters. They wrote Three Little Words and Everyone Says I Love You. And but they wrote lots of the stuff in the script is stuff that you're glad isn't in the movie.
Yeah. Before we're getting really short on time, I'm sorry to say, and I wanted to play one more little bit here but just because I like it, and it's a good example of the kind of stuff that Chico and Groucho did with one another. So this would, Mike, this will be the next to the last, the one that where Chico is on trial for being a spy. You know the one I want? Okay, let's just listen to that.
Chickalee, you're charged with high treason, and if found guilty, you'll be shot.
I object.
Oh, you object. On what grounds?
I couldn't think of anything else to say.
Objection sustained.
Your Excellency, you sustained the objection?
Sure, I couldn't think of anything else to say either. Why don't you object?
Chickalee, when were you born?
I don't remember. I was just a little baby.
Isn't it true you tried to sell Fredonia's secret war code and plans?
Sure, I sold the code and two pair of plans. It's some joke, eh, boss?
No, I bet you're 20 to 1 we find you guilty.
Chickalee, have you anyone here to defend you?
It's no use. I even offered to pay as high as $18, but I no could get somebody to defend me.
My friends, this man's case moves me deeply. Look at Chickalee. He sits there alone. An abject figure.
I abject.
I say, look at Chickalee. He sits there alone. A pitiable object. Let's see you get out of that one. Surrounded by a sea of unfriendly faces.
Chickalee, give me a number from 1 to 10. 11. Right. Now I ask you one. What is it? Has a trunk with no key. Weighs 2,000 pounds and lives in a circus.
That's irrelevant.
Irrelevant? Hey, that's the answer. There's a whole lot of irrelevance in a circus.
That sort of testimony we can eliminate.
That's a fine. I'll take some.
You'll take what?
A lemonade. A nice cold glass of lemonade. Hey, boss, I'm going to good.
Yeah. Gentlemen, Chickalee here may talk like an idiot and look like an idiot, but don't let that fool you. He really is an idiot. I implore you, send him back to his father and brothers who are waiting for him with open arms in the penitentiary. I suggest that we give him 10 years in Leavenworth or 11 years in Twelveworth.
I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll take 5 and 10 in Woolworth.
I wanted to get rid of habeas corpus, but I should have gotten rid of you instead.
I object.
Even I object.
Then I object, too.
You're on trial. You can't object.
Your Excellency, General Cooper says that the Sylvanian troops are about to land on Fredonia's soil. This means war.
Something must be done. War would mean a prohibitive increase in our taxes.
Hey, I got an uncle who lives in Texas.
No, I'm talking about Texas. Money. Dollars.
Dallas. That's where my uncle lives. Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, Dallas, Texas. Yeah. I want to at least get in that joke.
Yeah, if you've always wondered how the elephant joke would, the irrelevant elephant joke translates into French, I suggest you either read my book or rent the DVD and put on the French subtitles.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to leave it with that. And it's been a great pleasure to talk with you. And I'm really pleased that it gave me reason to sit down and watch this movie once again. Yeah. And I hope that people will. If you haven't seen this movie and some of their other movies in a long time, it always works for me. It still always does. It's a funny thing, but it's just to have them see them go through those routines. And it doesn't matter how many times I've seen them, I still get a charge out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Gave Woody Allen reason to live.
Yeah. Well, Roy, I want to thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, David.
We certainly appreciate it. Roy Blunt, his most recent book is Hail, Hail, Euphoria, presenting the Marx Brothers in Duck Soup, the greatest war movie ever made. Now we got to talk a little bit about Dallas, and we're not talking about Dallas, taxes. No, we're talking about the dollars that we want you to be sending to us so that we can buy a coat and two pair of plans and so that we can keep this station going. Yes, one morning I shot an elephant in my pajamas. What he was doing in my pajamas? No, never mind. How he got in my pajamas, I don't know. Anyway, we're here for a couple of minutes to close out the hour. Mark Leonard is here with me. He's my boss. He's the general manager of WILL, Illinois Public Media, and he is here to make the appeal to say to folks, okay, if you enjoy the show and the other things that you hear on the station, these programs need your financial support.
Well, and you do enjoy the show. You probably are a regular listener. It's a very loyal group of people who tune in every day to listen to David Inge and his endless list and supply of guests. They run the gamut, and one today that makes you chuckle and tells you probably some stories about the Marx Brothers you did not ever know before, which is what this program does every single day. The number to call to support this program and all of the programs on WILL is 244-9455. I was just thinking as I was walking in here, I saw a magazine come in the other day to the station. It was titled, a trade journal titled Talk Radio. Mm. And the term talk radio has become kind of a charged word, you know, where perhaps when Focus started many years ago, it meant something different than it means today. And it just struck me how this show gets lumped in with many, many other programs that bear no resemblance to what we do on AM 580. Mm-hmm. Most talk radio now is a matter of, you know, bombast and opinions and repetition of, you know, inflammatory phrases and things like that. What we've done on Focus for years has been not inflammatory. It's been to provide access and insight and knowledge and complex ideas. And it is a rare, rare phenomenon in radio broadcasting. And this magazine suddenly just kind of hit me over the head when I saw all of these personality faces listed that for many people defines talk radio. Well, your member dollars are what make it possible to produce a different form of talk radio. And I'm suspecting that perhaps you already know that, and that's why you're tuned to this station. What we're saying right now is those are commercial formats. Those attract large audiences and advertising support by a very different model. And the reason that we're not shrill and we're not full of inflammatory opinions is that we respect our listeners.
Yeah, we said a long time ago that we really didn't want to emphasize personality. The joke of my good friend, the late, great Charles Lindy, was we didn't want to emphasize personality, so they picked a guy that didn't have one to host the show. Me.
And that's hardly the case.
Well, what we really tried to do is we hope that the spotlight is going to be on the guest and on whatever it is we're talking about. And we try to have a good conversation, and I certainly hope that the program is and can be entertaining. And I don't know that there's anything really wrong with wanting to be entertaining. I mean, to me, what that means is it makes people want to listen. And, you know, often people have said to me, you know, I kind of started listening at the beginning of the show, and I wasn't really sure that I would be interested in that topic, whatever it is you were talking about. But then they said, but, you know, you got me, and I got hooked in, and I found myself, I'd listened to the whole program. And I beforehand, I wouldn't have said, well, that I'd be particularly interested in that. And when I hear that, I think, well, that's great. That's really what we should be doing, especially if it's something that you would have said, well, before then, I didn't, whatever it was we were talking about, topic X, I really didn't know anything about that. I couldn't have told you anything about it. But after the show, yeah, I did.
Well, and it's a forum to dig deeper. You know, you spend the adequate amount of time with a guest to really go beneath the, you know, the sound bites or the, you know, the easy headlines. In a very similar way to what is done on the television side with Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose is one of those really, really rare interviewers who brings a unique program to television that some people think perhaps is old-fashioned. I don't think it's old-fashioned at all. I think it's actually pioneering work, which is get the very best guests on the air, ask really insightful questions, and give them adequate time to answer. It doesn't exist in the commercial formats. You know it. You value it. Now we're just asking you to support it this morning and let us know that, yes, it is something that is important to you and that you're going to pay your fair share at 244-9455.
Yeah. Or you can go online. Go to willpledge.org. The important thing is that you make your financial contributions. And when you do that, you're supporting everything that we do here on WILL Radio. So it's not just Focus. We hope that people will do that. But it's all of the other local stuff that we do. It's the market reports, and we got one coming up in here in just a moment. It's our local news coverage. It is also then the national public radio programs that we bring to you as well, because we have to pay for those shows too. They're not free to us. We pay money to have those programs on the air on your behalf. So we would hope that if you do tune in regularly for Morning Edition or All Things Considered, that you make your contribution, because what you're doing is you're helping to keep those shows on the air as well.
And it is expensive to provide the national content as well as the local content. And what your membership dollars have done in the past has been to allow this station to be more than just the national content. And that is a margin of excellence that most stations this size don't have, are not able to have that commitment to a daily, deep talk program and the ag reporting and everything and the news coverage that we provide locally. Very, very valuable. It is a result of the current members of WILL, and we do thank them. If you're not yet one of them, this is the easiest time during the entire year for you to join those ranks. All you have to do is make one phone call, pick one of the pledge levels, might ask about the different thank you gifts that are available, and then sit back and say, yep, I'm making it possible with my contribution because I know what good radio is all about.
Okay. Well, we're going to pause here, as we usually do at this point. Because upcoming here, we have an update on the markets, and we'll have some news from National Public Radio. In the next part of the show, we'll tell some more stories, and maybe again, we'll be telling people some stories that they're not familiar with. We'll be looking at local history, very local history, the history of Champaign County. And our guest for the program will be Dan McCollum. Should be a familiar name to folks. He was mayor of Champaign, is well known for being a writer and also a local historian. He's authored a recent book that's titled Remembering Champaign County. So we'll talk a little bit about the origins of the county in the next part of Focus. So we want you to stick around.
Today's programs are made possible by Silver Creek in downtown Urbana, serving lunch and dinner every day with a brunch on Sunday. For 20 years, Silver Creek has served fresh and seasonally current dinners by the fireplace in warm wood ambience. Silver Creek offers over 100 of the world's finest wines and draft beers.
Just again, one more reminder that this is a point during the year that we actually sit down in front of the microphones and say, well, you know, your support is really valuable to us. People have supported us year after year, and to them we want to say thanks. But to everybody else, if you're recently discovered us for whatever reason, if you're not a financial supporter of the station, we hope you'll take the opportunity this morning to do that. You can call 217-244-9455. Also go to our website, willpledge.org. Right now we'll break for an update on the markets, so stay tuned.